This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And on tonight's show, Sally Huffer will be here, in fact, she is here, to discuss the work of the Montrose Counseling Center, from helping teens deal with issues surrounding their sexual orientation to providing a network of friends and allies for LGBT seniors. On NewsWrap, more than 100 British MPs have endorsed a motion condemning Uganda's so-called Kill the Gays bill. And a Mississippi high school senior, Constance McMillan, continues to be lauded by LGBT activists and shunned by her peers for wanting to take her girlfriend to the prom. Then at 9:40, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The president has said he wants the policy removed. So what can we do? Terry Preston will discuss what HRC is doing and how we can help them to help GLBT soldiers. In our second hour, Paul Guillory will join us to discuss an event this Saturday at the Montrose Counseling Center, hosted in part by HRC Houston, which will explore opportunities for improving participation in civil rights activities by members of the Black LGBT community. And we have the feature segment of This Way Out. Tonight, 74-year-old Alice Herman tells her story about demanding equal rights under Social Security, and U.S. Representative Linda Sanchez, a member of the House Subcommittee on Social Security, promises legislative redress at the Rock for Equality rally yesterday in Hollywood. All that tonight on Queer Voices, but first, Patti Smith, the mother of punk rock, is going to be in town next Monday.
Well, and on the line with us, we have Saba. Good evening. Hello?
Yes, she's there.
Hello?
Yes, this is Saba.
Yes.
Yes.
Give us a little bit intro about Patti Smith. You know, you actually know her.
I actually have been very fortunate to meet her and know her and be in touch with her, and she has actually now established a relationship with KPFT also. I was in LaGuardia Airport about 7 years ago, and it was, we were, she and I had both, not together, but we had both participated in a protest against the war in Iraq. And the very next day, we were at LaGuardia Airport coming to Houston. And she was coming for an exhibition at the CAM, the Contemporary Arts Museum, and I was just coming back to town where I'm based. And we ended up talking, and we went on to schedule. We already had an interview scheduled with her on KPFT. I used to co-host Living Art with Michael Woodson. And we spent an hour a few days later talking to her on the radio, and she and I kept in touch since then.
Why don't you give us a little bit, in case somebody doesn't know, most people on KPFT probably do, but maybe not all the younger generation.
I know, we've been encountering that. I walk around saying, we're bringing Patti Smith, the Patti Smith, to town, and then my five-year-old says, Ami, why are you saying the Patti Smith? And then I explain, well, Patti Smith is just an amazing rock icon. I mean, she's a woman who really paved the path and sets an example for artists to follow their vision, and the reason she's coming to town now is for her to read from her new memoir. It was published in January, and it's called Just Kids, and it's really about her relationship with Robert Mapplethorpe. And this was a part of her life that I sort of knew about, but not in the way I learned after I read her memoir, which is beautifully written. So in the memoir, she talks about how she ran away from home at age 17, and she met Robert Mapplethorpe, and together they lived together, and they were lovers for 4 years. And in that time, they committed to staying with each other. And this was before Robert Mapplethorpe really came out with himself and really explored his own sexuality. And the way she talks about that time is just really, really powerful, and how then they both found their own voices. Robert, of course, went on to become a famous photographer, and his work is known around the world, and Patti was the mother of punk rock, as you said.
And it's absolutely amazing. I mean, as I was growing up and listening to her, somehow those lyrics and the way she performed really sort of had a message to a lot of us. And not only the GLBT community, but like young people and about, you know, sort of about the whole protest movement and changing society. Like, you know, basically what Pacifica, you know, try to exemplify. And we talked earlier today that if you do a little research under Fresh Air, the radio program on NPR, she did an amazing interview with Terry Gross and talks about, even about writing a song about when Robert's lover died.
Yes.
And then, you know, how she wasn't even in New York at the time, but the song was so powerful. And she's not only a singer, but she's also an artist.
She's a visual artist. She's a poet. She's got collections of poetry published. That's the first thing she did. I mean, that was her first art form, was really writing. She published a book of poetry, and music actually came second. But once she began performing, she's never stopped. And I've seen her perform at the Meridian about 4 years ago, I believe, she was in town, and she still brought the house down. And I was re-listening to the interview that Michael Woodson and I did with her 7 years ago, and in that she talks about how important it is that there should be no line between art and activism. Like, sometimes people talk to her about,
right,
oh, what does activism have to do with art? And she, in that interview, she talks about art is about activism. Art is about speaking out. If we don't speak out, we are going against what we are not the full humans that we can be. You know, really powerful. She's just such an icon and such a role model.
Well, what's really neat about this, she'll be in town next Monday at 7 p.m. at the University of Houston, Cullen Performance Hall, and the tickets are incredibly reasonably priced. And she's basically going to be doing a reading from her book called Just Kids.
And she'll also be performing some music. And then at the end, we've set up a very informal format for question and answer. We'll just have two mics on the sides, and people will just line up to ask questions. And we just really, that's her style. She's open. I mean, it won't be a moderated conversation. People can just come up and say whatever they need to say and whatever they want to say with her, to her, and she will embrace that.
Well,
because that is really what her People Have the Power song is about.
And where can they purchase tickets?
So for advance tickets, they can go to Brothers Bookstore, and that ticket comes with a $30 book. That's how much you get advance. You get preferred seating. And if people just want to come and purchase tickets on the day of the show, the doors open. Voices Breaking Boundaries is the organization presenting Patty, and we are a very grassroots activist arts organization, which is why Patty is connected to us. And we are not doing this for money. We just want to expose,
sure,
Patty Smith to as many people as possible.
Now, will you be interviewing her on the show?
I'll be interviewing her in the morning at noon.
Okay. And when is the show on?
The show is at 7 o'clock at Cullen Performance Hall at 7 p.m. at night, April 19th.
Great. I really appreciate you letting us know about that. This is a really, you know, it's something that it really is a lot of different shows on KPFT. This really is, you know, we all should be supporting this because this breaks a lot of borders.
Thank you so much for having me talk about it.
Great, thank you, Sarah.
And we'll see you next Monday.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Listening to Queer Voices.
This is Queer Voices.
And another great event in our community is Pride. And last Thursday, they announced the Grand Marshals, and of which a very esteemed organization was named as the organizational Grand Marshal, and that was the Montrose Counseling Center. And in the studio tonight, we have the diva of the Montrose Counseling Center.
Well, the diva of KPFT, Queer Voices, who always is here with us. I mean, if anything's going on, the quintessential person we call to let us know what's happening.
That would be Sally Hutter.
I'm so
Do
blushing.
We even have to introduce you?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, we're not on TV, so probably so.
Okay, well, Sally Huffer of the Montrose Counseling Center. And let me just say, it is about time that y'all won the Grand Marshal. I think that's well overdue. And for all that you do in the community, I think it's great recognition. And thank you. And thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you. I could not be more thrilled. I mean, I've been at Montrose Counseling Center for 10 years, coming up in August.
And we have to say that the honorary Grand Marshal was
Ann Robison, our executive director.
So it was like a double win for
we
you.
We could not be happier.
Oh. And I say congratulations. And for those out there who do not know what the Montrose Counseling Center, tell us a little bit about it. And
Well, before she lets you, we need to make this vitally important. They know that they have been serving our community for 30 years.
30 plus years.
32 years.
32 years. Yeah. They've been here doing the heavy lifting for our community long before anybody else was.
So, absolutely.
Yes. Now I tell
wow.
us all about
it. I know that there's a large umbrella of services that you provide, but let's let our listeners know.
Okay. Well, great, because a lot of times when you think of Montrose Counseling Center, you're just thinking about therapy, which is the bulk of what we do.
I mean, counseling and counseling center.
Yeah, we are the experts, I like to think, in our community. And I say that I'm not a therapist myself, but we have some of the best and brightest, and they all, if they themselves don't identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, they are very familiar with the issues that our community is facing. And that means that you can come to Montrose Counseling Center if you're struggling with any issues surrounding relationships or coming out or, you know, your own identity. That's fine. But the other thing is that you can come and talk to somebody if that's not your main issue, but that kind of is like your background stuff, so that you don't have to spend time educating your therapist. You don't have to explain, well, you know, last weekend I went to Key West with my boyfriend and, you know, we had a big fight and then he went off to this bar and I went off to that bar and, you know, having to explain that to
right.
somebody.
What? You're gay? That's your first problem. Oh, my God.
We have a little cartoon that we have at the counseling center where it's from a faith-based organization where this person is going to seek help and she says, oh, well, you're homeless and, you know, you don't have any clothing, no food, you've got all these different problems, and she lists them one by one, and then she says, oh, and you're lesbian. Well, let's start there, shall we?
That's the most fundamental problem, I guess.
So we like to think that you can come and talk to anything, whether it's, you know, anxiety, depression, whether you're going through any of these other, you know, issues that you might go see a therapist about, and then you're in a comfortable, safe place. And, I mean, we have people, we are a nonprofit organization, and so a lot of people might think that, you know, we have just students offering counseling. We have some students offering counseling, but everybody that's a therapist at Montrose Counseling Center is a licensed master of social work or a master's level. So they are, many of them have even been at the agency. I'm thinking of several that have been there 10 plus years themselves. So they're people who really do know this community, who know all the little ins and outs and what people are going through. I'm not saying that, you know, it's not challenging from time to time. So the bulk of what we do is counseling.
And before we get too far into this, let's let our listeners know where it is. You are in Montrose.
Yes, and we're very proud to be a part of Montrose. We're a member of First Montrose Commons, the Neighborhood Association. This is our neighborhood, and we are at 401 Brannard Street.
Brannard or Bernard?
Brannard.
So that's next to the spur, the 529 spur going into downtown. You can see the kind of the building.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sign.
Yeah, there is a big sign, although the sign just says MCC on the exterior.
Well, but our listeners will now know that MCC is the Montrose Counseling Center.
Yes.
And they can go there. It's a beacon of hope.
So I like to think
besides so. Counseling, I know that you do some other things.
We like to think of ourselves as addressing quality of life issues as well. That also includes, like Glenn had mentioned at the top of the hour, the SPRI program for GLBT seniors.
Okay, I'm going to clap for that. Because
yes, absolutely. Being one of those,
we're not getting any younger.
There.
Exactly. And where are we going to go? So that's exactly right.
So
we're going to go to the Montrose
right.
Counseling Center.
Well, and you know, certainly you can get counseling and case management services if you need them at the counseling center. But when we think about seniors, we're also talking about isolation. And a lot of people, you know, they start losing friends or partners, and they feel all alone. And so being able to have a place where they can come and interact and socialize with one another, I mean, I think that's one of the most valuable things that we offer. And we have groups that meet for the SPRI. There's one for men, one for women, and there's information on our website, www.montrosecounselingcenter.org, or those SPRI folks have their own website, www.spryhouston.org.
That's a new thing. I didn't know about that.
Are they on the Facebook, too?
Just Montrose Counseling Center is on the Facebook.
All right.
We cross, you know.
Now, is there dating services for our seniors in the community? Because I know they want some love.
I don't know of any.
They want love, too.
You just want to make sure that someday.
Well, hopefully, knock on wood, I'll still be with that partner. I know people, they're not dead. They definitely want.
That's one of the things that we found out when we launched the SPRI program is that we went to a number of residential centers, nursing homes and the like, and we asked people, you know, how do you address the needs of your gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender residents? And they said, well, but we don't have any gay residents.
Like the president of Iran.
Yeah.
Well, but their argument was that this was all about sexuality and sexuality alone, and people who are in nursing homes aren't having sex anymore. So that means
were they missing something?
So, number one,
lights go out.
but seniors are having a good time, number one. But number two, it's not just about your sexuality. It's about your identity and your affection and, you know, being able to have somebody come in and, you know, can you have a picture of your partner on your bedstand? Can your partner come in and hold your hand and give you a kiss good night? All of those things are really important that a lot of people who aren't in this community may take for granted. And so we want to make sure that we can educate some of the nursing homes and residential places and say, look, these are things that our community needs too in order to have quality of life.
I absolutely applaud that, and I know it's unique, and kudos for y'all for doing that.
Okay. Do you ever get pushback from some of those institutions?
There have been some. As I say, one of the things that we've heard was that, you know, we don't have any gay people here. We have a couple of outreach workers who would go on a regular basis, and frequently they would be shown the door, we don't need your services, we don't have any of those kind. I mean, all of those things, you know. And unfortunately, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, I'm not saying that gaydar is 100%, but, I mean, we've actually been in places, known somebody there, seen somebody there.
Fabulous decorations in the room.
And been told, no, there isn't anybody here that's gay. So, but there are some other places that are extremely warm and welcoming. I mean, I have to say, and I don't mean to plug a specific place, but a few years ago I had to look for a nursing home for my mother. And when I went, I had my badge on for Montrose Counseling Center. And the woman said, hey, you guys have that SPRI program. You guys had somebody come out and talk to us about that. And I was thrilled. I mean, you know, when you're out there interviewing nursing homes and that kind of thing, when I hear somebody recognizing the needs of GLBT seniors and that they recognize that that's important, I'm thinking they're going to take probably pretty good care of my ma, you know? I mean,
well, and I think the worst thing ever would be to live your whole life open as a GLBT and then go into a nursing home and then have to go back into the closet.
Well, and that's what we've
heard. But you're forced into the closet.
You have to live this lie after living out in the open for so long, and that's just...
Well, and even when you invite home health care workers into your home, if you don't go into a nursing home, let's say you want to invite somebody to your home. Brian, do you have any artwork or statues in your home that might suggest that you...
Oh, my house is very, very gay.
Suggestive, is that what you're thinking?
Not necessarily. It can be beautiful artwork. I'm just saying that, you know, different things appeal to different people, and so...
There's no doubt when people go into my house.
Exactly what I'm saying. So if it were just you and you had a home health care worker come to your house, would you feel comfortable with that person not knowing anything about them?
I would take down pictures of my partner, and, you know, why should I have to do that, you know, for a home health
care? Why should you have to do
that? That's my home.
Exactly.
Or that's someone's home. Why should you change for someone who's coming in?
And wish, you know, that it could be like that for everybody. But not everybody is comfortable. And especially when we're talking about an age and a population where people didn't talk about their problems. They stayed in the closet. A lot of people, you know,
absolutely.
Stayed in the
closet. That's right. A whole generation that lived in the closet is now coming golden years.
The rainbow golden years. And, you know, what do we do now?
But let's not forget, too, that there are plenty of out and proud seniors, too. How wonderful are they? I just met with Marion Coleman tonight, and we were talking about Jack Jackson and a whole bunch of people that, you know, kind of laid the foundation for all of us.
Well, let's shift gears. I know that you also have programs for the youth in our community.
We do. The Hatch program. And
I'm going to clap for that one, too.
Yay.
That's a quintessential Houston community program that's been
I'm extremely happy. One of the hosts of the other gay programs on KPFT After Hours. She is
one of the,
yeah, yes. She's one of the Hatch youth that goes on the show and talks about Hatch and other issues. Her name is Lakia, and Lakia
I
just
love Lakia.
I know Lakia just recently won a national award for emerging activist, for young GLBT emerging activist at American University in Washington, D.C.
She absolutely deserves
wonderful.
It.
So I'm just getting goosebumps thinking about how proud I am that somebody from Houston, somebody from Hatch, felt nurtured enough, whether it was from Hatch or her own family or her friends, but felt, you know, strong enough to be able to apply for something like that. So we're very excited about
that. Well, and I think Hatch is kind of, there's a lot of people that have come through Hatch and become community pillars, and that, you know, that's a huge credit to the fostering environment that Hatch has provided through the years, when it wasn't very you know, common and spoken about.
Right. Well, and one of the things that we're experiencing now is that, you know, we have to kind of always look and see what is the need for something like Hatch. Once upon a time, when, you know, it was really difficult to meet one another, it had its purpose. Now, I'm not saying that that purpose has gone away, but it's changed a little bit with access to the internet, and people are actually able to find out a little bit more about, you know, their own sexuality and that sort of thing, keeping in mind too that there are risks when somebody does do a search on sexuality and they're doing it at home. There might be filtering software on their computers, or certainly at school or the library,
or their parents are checking their computers, and they may not be ready to come out to their parents.
Exactly. So, you know, so it does still have a very important purpose.
And we're seeing in the national news where there are students that want to go to their prom, but they're not allowed to because the schools won't allow them. But here in Houston, through the Hatch program, they have the opportunity.
Not only do they have the opportunity, we have, it's, I think this year is the 18th annual Hatch Prom.
Wow.
It's coming up on June 11th, and it's not just an opportunity for the Hatch youth to go and dress as they wish, which is really important. That means, you know, young women can wear their tuxedos and young men can, you know, wear their
gowns.
Isn't
it funny how we kind of cross in
sometimes,
the middle?
But I have to say I've seen some of the most handsome young men in their tuxedos and some of the most beautiful lesbians in their gowns. And
there are no rules, no boundaries.
No, and that's the whole point. And you can bring your date to the prom, whoever you choose to ask. But here's the other great thing, is for those of us who are a little bit older and didn't get to experience the prom the way we really wish we could have, we can go to the Hatch Prom. Now, there's not going to be any alcohol because it, you know, is a function for youth between the ages of 13 and 20, but we have a DJ, there's food, there'll be a photographer taking prom photos. So it is, in every other way, shape, and form, you know, a big party, and we welcome the community to come. It's for a small fee. Anybody over the age of 21, we ask you to donate $25 to the prom, and of course that supports Hatch and the Hatch program. So but it is a phenomenal night.
Now, we had invited Anne to come on the show tonight, but she unfortunately could not. Could you tell us about what she does at the Counseling Center?
Anne is our fearless leader, our executive director, and she's been with the agency, I'm thinking like 21 or 22 years. She's been there a while.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I remember she talks about when she first came to the agency is that, you know, they used to be over here on Lovett across the street from, you know, the radio station, and then they moved to Montrose Counseling Center, and now we've moved into this big building, and she's kind of, you know, overseen all of those different growth spurts. But when she first came to the agency, the budget was like $300,000,
mm-hmm.
and now our budget is $4 million. Now, think about, in 20 years, when your budget, you know, grows that significantly, how many people we can help, because, you know, Anne does all of our grant writing for our federal grants. I mean, there aren't that many executive directors in town, mm-hmm. regardless of where you are.
Yeah.
She does hold very tight reins on the money. We are, you know, our audits are clean, very few, if any, findings. We're really proud that 93% of the money that we bring in goes directly to client services, and that's an almost unheard of percentage.
That's a very, very, very high percentage.
So, you know, that does mean that we're scrimping for, you know,
That means
paperclips.
That the money that you raise goes to help the community, and that's even more of a reason to, A, support the community center, and B, celebrate them getting the Grand Marshal?
Well, we're thrilled. I just, like I said, I've been there 10 years, and this is the first time that it's been considered and selected. So I'm very excited about that. I do want to mention, too, because, and only because she couldn't come on the radio tonight, when Anne came in on Friday after the announcement Thursday, she had the... I guess it's a sash or a ribbon, medal that they award to the Pride Parade Grand Marshals. And I stopped by her office and I saw she had it. And I said, look, you know, wow, look at that. And she kind of had it on display. And she said, finally, people realize how passionate, how much I truly love the mission of what we're doing. And that's one of the things, you know, we're never going to change our mission to exclude the words gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender.
You're giving me goosebumps because I know how passionate she is and how much she cares, and for the community to recognize her and to give her that, you know, that award, I think totally deserved.
You know what else she told me is that she was raised in a very conservative family in a very conservative part of Texas. And she had had family members, a niece, come one year to visit her in the summertime, and Anne took the niece to the gay pride parade, and the kid had a great time. I mean,
of course
the niece
she did.
Had a fabulous time. Who doesn't, right? Come on, it's the pride parade.
What now? That's full circle. Now she'll be at the front of the parade.
Well, the funny thing is that her niece went home and said, you know, I went to the pride parade, had a great time, but Anne's relative said, now you can't visit Aunt Anne anymore.
Oh, no.
And so...
Oh, no. She's that evil person in the big city.
Well, needs That's more education. Maybe she needs more education.
Absolutely.
And so for Anne, she said, you know, that this does bring it full circle for her, you know, that you know, she was able to introduce a family member to something that she was very passionate about and still receive some rejection for it.
Oh, of course.
So, you know, she is extremely passionate about the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community. And I think she's really proud that people recognize her as a strong ally for our community.
If you're joining us, we're talking to Sally Huffer of the Montrose Counseling Center, which last week was named the Organizational Grand Marshal of the Pride Parade. And its executive director, Anne Robinson, was named the honorary Grand Marshal. Now, what's coming up for the Counseling Center in the next month or two?
Well, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And so this is something that we want to talk about in our community, because we know even in the community at large, we don't talk about sexual assault. Most people don't get help if they need it, if they are the victim of sexual assault. And it doesn't matter whether you were molested as a child or whether, you know, it happened a few years ago. A lot of people don't deal with the issues surrounding that. And one of the things we were talking about this year is, what would a world without sexual violence look like? And so, because... a sexual assault, if you're the victim of a sexual assault, it has so many ramifications. We can look at, you know, unemployment, dropout rates. We can look at substance abuse. We can look at suicide. We can look at depression. We can look at so many other different factors. You know, when statistics are as high as they are, you know, one in every four women is the victim of a sexual assault in their lifetime. You know, this is something that we need to address as a community and realize that it does happen within our community, not just with same-sex partners. It happens at the bars. It happens with hookups online and that kind of thing. And one of the things we need to be able to do is talk about it openly and honestly without shame. And all too often, we have shame around some of these issues. Did I cause it? Is it because I'm gay? Mm. You know, for many, many years, people would say, well, have you ever noticed that a lot of gay people were sexually assaulted as children? They were molested as children. Did that cause the gay? Well, actually, a lot of the research now shows that the predators, the people who are targeting young people, the pedophiles, they're looking for somebody who's vulnerable. And guess who are among the vulnerable in our society?
Yes, we're born into our community. Yeah,
we're born into shame, you know. Society says we're wrong.
And so one of the things that they're noticing now is that, you know, it might be just the opposite. Mm. And so a lot of people might be out there thinking, hey, I wonder if I'm gay because my uncle or my father or, you know, somebody assaulted me. And we're learning that that's not usually the case.
I mean,
and there's a place you can go to talk about it now, even if it happened 20 years ago.
Absolutely. Heal the wounds.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell us, where's the Montrose Counseling Center one more time?
I will. It's 401 Brainerd Street,
That's Heart of the Montrose.
Heart of the Montrose, kind of by the High School for the Performing and Visual Arts, if you know where that is. So, and we have a website, www.montrosecounselingcenter.org, and our phone number is 713-529-0037.
Sally Huffer of the Montrose Counseling Center, thank you very much for coming on, and join us at the end of June at the beginning of the Pride Parade, where she and the rest of her entourage
yes,
will be...
Yes, the Montrose Counseling Center will be honored.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you. We are honored.
And this is Queer Voices.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 10th, 2010. The Philippine Supreme Court ruled this week that the LGBT advocacy group Ang Lad Lad, which means out of the closet, is a legitimate political party that can field candidates in May's national elections. Voting 13-2, the court overturned the January decision by the country's Elections Commission rejecting Ang Lad Lad's application. The commission said that the group tolerates immorality which offends religious beliefs. Three of the commissioners cited passages from the Bible and the Quran to justify their ruling, claiming that Ang Lad Lad exposes young people to an environment that does not conform to the teachings of our faith. Ang Lad Lad challenged the decision in the Supreme Court. This week's ruling said that the party had complied with all legal requirements and noted that there is no law against homosexuality in the Philippines. The High Court justices also wrote that the denial of Ang Lad Lad's registration on purely moral grounds amounts more to a statement of dislike and disapproval of homosexuals rather than a tool to further any substantial public interest. Ang Lad Lad's major platform will most likely be the passage of LGBT anti-discrimination laws. It will be one of more than 100 parties contesting 50 of the 286 seats in the House of Representatives that are specifically designated for marginalized constituencies. The head of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of the Philippines said that accrediting Ang Lad Lad encourages abnormality and urged the faithful not to vote for any of the party's candidates.
Portugal's Constitutional Court approved the marriage equality law this week that received final ratification in the country's parliament in February. Portuguese President Anibal Cavaco Silva, a political conservative, asked the High Court to verify its constitutionality. He now has until the end of April to sign the legislation, just ahead of Pope Benedict XVI's official visit to the heavily Roman Catholic country. Tribunal President Ruri Maura Ramos told reporters that while the marriage equality bill does not conform to the exact concept of marriage in the nation's constitution, the High Court believed that the concept is open to interpretation and evolution. Portugal would be the sixth European nation to legalize same-gender marriage, joining Belgium, the Netherlands, Norway, Spain, and Sweden. There are different forms of civil unions or civil partnerships in Britain, France, and Germany.
The Inter-American Commission on Human Rights has told Chile's Supreme Court that its ruling denying child custody to a mother because she was living with her lesbian partner was a violation of the woman's human rights. The commission's ruling on Karen Atala's case was reportedly issued in February, but only came to light this week. Atala lost custody of her three children to her estranged husband in May of 2004 and took her case to the commission that November. The Chilean justices believed that the girls would be psychologically damaged if they lived in a household headed by a same-gender couple. The decision by the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, which is an autonomous body of the Organization of American States, called on the Chilean government to make reparations. It also urged the enactment of legislation, policies, and programs to eradicate discrimination based on sexual orientation. One of her lawyers, Jorge Contessa, told the BBC that Atala was no longer seeking custody of her children. She doesn't want her daughters to go through everything they went through 6 years ago, he said, explaining that she wanted to be sure that the government took steps towards ending discrimination against sexual minorities. But Chilean Supreme Court Chief Magistrate Milton Huica issued a defiant response, refusing to join a working group proposed by the government to comply with the commission's suggestions. The courts do not discriminate in any way, he said. Although the government of right-wing President Sebastián Piñera said it accepted the commission's recommendations, Contessa said that Huica's reaction was an unequivocal signal of the state's lack of will to live up to them.
Russia's constitutional court has dismissed a complaint from LGBT activists challenging the Ryazan region's ban on exposing minors to homosexual propaganda. Gay activists Nikolai Alexeyev, Nikolai Bayev, and Irina Fett claimed that the ban violates the nation's constitutional guarantees of freedom of thought and speech and freedom from discrimination. The court, however, ruled that banning dissemination of information which can harm health, morals, and spiritual development, including formation of distorted perceptions about the social equivalence of traditional and non-traditional marriage relations among persons who are deprived due to their age or the ability to critically evaluate such information, cannot be considered as breaching the constitutional rights of citizens. Alexeyev said activists also filed a challenge to the ban in the slow-moving European Court of Human Rights last year. Baev and Fett deliberately violated the law a year ago by carrying pro-gay signs near a school and library in downtown Ryazan, which is about 200 kilometers or 120 miles southeast of Moscow. They were each fined 1,500 rubles, about $51.
But the equality bill has passed through its final stages in the British Parliament and will become law after receiving official royal assent. The bill consolidates and simplifies existing equality laws, encompassing characteristics such as race, gender, and sexual orientation. It requires institutions such as schools, government councils, and the National Health Service to actively promote equality. The bill also prohibits private clubs from discriminating against members or guests based on their sexual orientation or gender identity, and introduces the concept of dual discrimination, where people can show they experience discrimination because, for example, they are both gay and of an ethnic minority. An amendment added last month allows same-gender couples to have their civil partnerships officiated in accepting places of worship. The bill has had its LGBT critics, however. The government decided last month not to fight the House of Lords over an amendment essentially exempting religious institutions from hiring anyone in teaching or ministerial positions who doesn't comply with its theological teachings. The new laws will begin to incrementally take effect in a few months.
118 members of the British Parliament also signed on to a motion this week sharply condemning Uganda's proposed Anti-Homosexuality Act. The draconian measure would punish certain convictions for private consensual adult same-gender sex with the death penalty and imprison anyone who fails to report a suspected gay or lesbian person to the authorities. The MP's motion said passage of the measure would be a violation of the African Charter of Human and People's Rights. It called on the Ugandan Parliament to decriminalize same-gender sex, which is already punishable by up to life in prison, and outlaw discrimination against sexual minorities. Uganda MP David Bahati, author of the so-called Kill the Gays Bill, is a member of The Family, a secretive Washington, D.C.-based evangelical group with extensive ties to conservative politicians in the U.S. and other countries. Agence France-Presse reported this week, however, that there's no longer much parliamentary support for the bill. It's been roundly condemned by governments and human rights groups around the world since its introduction late last year. Alex Ndizi, a member of the Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee, charged with reviewing the bill before it can be presented to the House, said it was useless and will not achieve what it intends to achieve. The panel's chairman, Stephen Tashioba, said the draft law was not a priority, and he set no timetable for debate. As far as I'm concerned, he said, we really have more urgent matters to discuss.
In the ever-changing story about a gay couple on trial for gross indecency in Malawi, Agence France-Presse also reported this week that the court has scheduled a final ruling in the case for May 18th. The magistrate asked for written submissions from both prosecutors and defense attorneys ahead of that date, but said he would issue his ruling even in the absence of submissions by one or both sides. Lawyers for Tawange Chimbalanga and Stephen Mwangeza had first been denied the opportunity to present any defense at all. The men were denied bail and have remained in jail since their arrest in December for holding a public engagement party. Conviction carries a sentence for each man of up to 14 years in prison.
And finally, U.S. high school senior Constance McMillan continues to be lauded by LGBT activists and shunned by her classmates for trying to bring her girlfriend to the prom. In March, after the Itawamba County School District refused to allow McMillan to bring a female date, the district canceled the event altogether. In a lawsuit filed on her behalf by the American Civil Liberties Union, a judge ruled that the school had discriminated against McMillan, but refused to order the district to hold an inclusive prom. While her peers partied at a secret location in Fulton, Mississippi this week at a prom organized by parents, McMillan was directed by other students to a fake prom at a country club that was attended by only 7 students, including 2 with learning difficulties. But McMillan has been invited to attend an anniversary celebration of the National Center for Lesbian Rights in San Francisco on May 1st. Executive Director Kate Kendall told the Associated Press that the annual gala is often referred to as the Lesbian Prom, and said the group is paying for McMillan's travel. And while it's unknown if she'll be there, members of the rock group Green Day, openly gay former NSYNC boy band member Lance Bass, and celebrity chef Kat Cora are among those helping to pay for a queer-friendly prom in Tupelo, Mississippi on May 8th. Organizers say the annual prom, sponsored by the Mississippi Safe Schools Coalition, is open to everyone, but geared toward LGBT students. According to some reports, Bass may also perform at the event.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 10th, 2010, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And we have a very special guest with us tonight, Colonel Terrell S. Preston. He served on active duty in the United States Air Force for over 26 years as a pilot. Earned two Top Gun Awards, look out Tom Cruise, piloted 30 directed missions over Central America, and commanded three squadrons in Desert Storm. Colonel Preston retired effective 1 July 2004. He's currently, or was, a military advisor for the Board of Service Members for the Legal Defense Network, a member of the HRC Federal Club, and the Governor's Circle member of Equality Texas. You've been busy, and you handed me a little piece of paper when you came in with more stuff.
Well, mostly because of the picture. I wanted you to see my pretty picture.
Well, we have to say...
You looked very handsome in that picture in your uniform.
Welcome to Queer Voices.
Yes.
Thank you, Brian, Jennifer. Very nice to be here.
Well, one of the things we wanted to talk about for sure, and that's why we let in, is don't ask, don't tell.
Oh, yeah.
And for some people who may have been living under a rock for the last 30 years or so, what is don't ask, don't tell?
Well, don't ask, don't tell is the law that was put together in 1993 to really answer President Clinton's promise in his campaign to repeal the current law that was in effect, which is to ban gay and lesbian service in the military. So a compromise was put together called, affectionately, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And this law basically says, we won't ask you about your sexual orientation when you apply to come in the military, and please don't tell us. But there are a lot of restrictions with the policy that that really goes against the grain of military, and that is one of the biggest things about being in the military is having integrity, telling the truth, being honest. And, of course, if you can't reveal who you really are, you can't be honest.
And what happens if they do, somehow they find out and you quote unquote told? What happens in that case?
Well, you know, a couple ways, Brian. Number one, maybe you just can't live with yourself anymore after serving in the closet for a few years in the military, and you decide you want to tell your commanding officer that I'm gay or lesbian. And in that case, they say, well, we have no choice but to discharge you. And the other thing that can happen is somebody who may not like you decides to out you and maybe says, oh, I think that, you know, that Brian's a gay man. And then the investigators in the military are obliged to find out if that's true. And usually the person admits it because they want to be honest, finally.
So that's the way. But also they can be outed by other things. The case where the police came to a house and just happened to see something and reported it to the military, which was in violation of their own codes of conduct. But yet the person is still not in the service.
Yeah, that's true, and there's a lot of different cases where that can occur, but probably the bulk of the situations are where a service member is either outed by one of his squadron mates or battalion mates who has a grudge or some problem, or they can't stand it anymore. They've got to be honest with themselves.
So it's don't ask, don't tell, but your buddy can tell, and you're out.
And that's pretty much the case. Now, you know, Secretary Gates just recently testified before Congress, he and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mullen, and they both said, this law has to go. It's time that we get rid of this. And after Secretary Gates did that, he actually changed the law a little bit, the policy in the military, in that they're not going to prosecute these third-party outings like they used to do with such vigor. They're going to be a little bit more restrained in that regard. And one of the reasons is they've got two wars going on. They really need to keep everybody in the military who's qualified to do their job.
And do we know any numbers about how many people have been discharged under Don't Ask, Don't
Tell? Yeah, we sure do, Brian. Since the law was enacted in 1993, about 13,500 people have been discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And that doesn't count the people who just did their four-year hitch, signed up and did their job for 4 years and said, but you know, I can't live like that. I'm not going to re-up. I'm not going to stay in the military. And that could be, you know, several times that number as well.
Wow.
Well, the other difficulty, too, is that someone could just accuse someone of being gay or lesbian, and then how do you prove a negative?
Yeah, that's true. And in a lot of those cases, the service member wants to stay in the military. And
at
first, they deny it. In fact, they even may hire legal counsel to defend themselves. And that's where the Service Members Legal Defense Network provides a pro bono service for people who have been accused of it and want to preserve their career. Because a lot of people really want to serve their country, whether they're gay, lesbian, straight, whatever. But this puts a real handicap on the gay and lesbian members.
I understand that a lot of the linguists are very skilled, and they have been outed and then kicked out when there was no one else to replace them.
Yeah, that's true. There is a deficit in that regard. The numbers aren't real high. There's like 59 Arabic and Farsi linguists who have actually been discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But the real telling issue is they're having trouble keeping those people qualified because a lot of people aren't re-upping. You know, why aren't they re-upping? Is it because, you know, it's this dilemma that they've got of they have discharged 13,500, but what about all the other people who just chose not to re-enlist?
Well, one of the things is that I remember seeing during the Clinton administration the different people who spoke, and at one point Colin Powell spoke in favor of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but that's changed. Even he has changed his opinion.
Absolutely.
And the military in general has sort of turned the corner. And for the most part, at least the leadership?
I think you'll find that there's overwhelming support for repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, even among service members. And it's true, Colin Powell talked in favor of keeping Don't Ask, Don't Tell in 93. But he's even come out in his retirement since and said, you know, we really need to reexamine this. That was based on what I thought the troops felt. And back then in the early 90s, the majority of the troops were really worried about this having gays and lesbians in the military, even though there's like 66,000 gays and lesbians serving right now in the military. You know, at the time, the service members didn't know that, and they were kind of worried about having them in the ranks. But today, it's a whole different environment. The kids, I say kids, people who are 35 years of age and younger, overwhelmingly, like Brian, overwhelmingly approve of gays and lesbians serving openly. And in fact, most of these people grew up on Will and Grace. They have gay best friends from high school. They don't have any problems with sexual orientation as a factor in service.
Is the argument that it will weaken the Army and the military and then thus, you know, weaken our country?
Does it really affect readiness?
What is the argument? I don't understand.
There is an argument that says if a straight member thinks there's a gay member in the unit, that it will make them uncomfortable. That is the key word. There's a discomfort with having a gay or lesbian serving in the unit.
So the bullets flying past your head won't make you uncomfortable, but the gay next to you will make you uncomfortable.
Even the senior leaders today in the military acknowledge that it's really about the ability to do your job. Are you mission ready to execute your mission? And it's really not about sexual orientation.
Now, what about, I know other countries have open military and they seem to do fine. What are some of the other countries, and can we learn from these vastly more progressive communities and countries?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there's 24 other countries in the world that allow gays and lesbians to serve openly. 22 of them are our allies. Some of our our most die-hard allies, like UK and Israel, Australia, Canada, and they serve side by side with us in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, units that have gays and lesbians in them are serving with us overseas. So really, most of our troops know gays and lesbians, not just in our services, but in the foreign services as well, and they've got no problem with them. I think the last poll was 75% of our currently serving service members either know of a gay or lesbian in their unit, and they have no problem with that at all.
But isn't this the same argument or close to it they made for women in the field?
Yeah, actually, and for African Americans as well. When Truman, by executive order, allowed the integration of the races in our services in 1948, the same argument was made, that it was going to make the rest of the members feel uncomfortable and they wouldn't be able to perform their mission. Well, we've proved, you know, in the last few years in wars that we have started in Iraq and Afghanistan since 2003, that that's not the case. You know, our members are serving proudly and effectively, gay and straight, side by side, ever since.
Well, I know that HRC in particular, it's their priority, and they've stated as such that the overturning the Don't Ask, Don't Tell is a priority for their legislative agenda. Well, what is it that HRC is specifically doing other than just the regular lobbying to overturn? To get the legislators to move forward on the issue.
Well, as usual, HRC's biggest role is advocacy and educating the public and lobbying. And so they have a very strong campaign that's partnered with some other key allies like the Service Members United, which is a grassroots organization of military members and veterans, and as well as the Service Member Legal Defense Network that wrote the law, the new Military Readiness Enhancement Act that's in Congress now, both the House and Senate. And so these organizations are all allied for an upcoming event on May 11th called a Lobby Day. And it's going to be this gigantic event where hundreds, if not thousands, of people come into Washington, D.C. to lobby their senators and congressmen.
Now, this is going to be veterans?
It's going to be all types. It'll be veterans. It'll be, you know, families of veterans. It'll be friends of veterans. It'll be anyone who can come and help.
Anyone who stands against the Don't Ask, Don't Tell
that's
policy
right.
as it is now.
That's right.
And that's when? May
11th? It sure is.
In Washington, D.C.?
It's in Washington, D.C. And you can get more information at hrc.org or sldn.org. We've got all the information about what's going to happen for that event.
Now, I don't know if all of our listeners may know what HRC stands for. Can you tell our listeners what that stands for?
Yeah, HRC is the Human Rights Campaign. It's about a 700,000-person organization nationwide. It's the biggest GLBT lobby group, advocacy group in the country.
Now, part of this is, too, now, especially under the Obama administration, the gays, lesbians are not discriminated against under executive order, but yet the military, why is one part of the government say it's okay and another part of the government say it's not?
Well, it kind of goes back to the idea of when it comes to fighting wars, you don't want anything to inhibit your ability to be the
kill
most effective.
People. Yeah.
Well, that's right.
I like how he spins it.
Yeah,
be
kill
most
people.
Effective.
Right. And so the military has had a successful argument saying, like, we get to decide who can serve and who can't. And as far as we're concerned, we're going to prohibit certain groups of people from serving in uniform. And they've been able to say that for many, many years that it's the GLBT community that can't serve. But, you know, the fact is...
The T's still can't.
Yeah, that's right. But the fact is, they've been serving forever. In all armies throughout history.
Oh, I had a very good friend who was a tank commander. Yes. Except on weekends.
Did you go for a ride?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact.
I don't understand how the military can say, you know, you want to volunteer for your country, you put your life on the line. No, not you. You're not worthy. I mean, it's the last form of discrimination against a segmented part of our community.
Well, in fact,
population.
In fact, Brian, it's the only law that overtly discriminates against any class of people in the U.S. That's how bad that really is. You're right.
We are talking with Colonel Terrell S. Preston, and we're talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and how we can help to repeal it. So what can we do? What would you suggest?
The biggest...
Other than we want to go to Washington on May 11th.
Right.
Okay.
You know, the thing is... You can march in every gay pride parade. You know, you can wear every rainbow color flag around your head you want to. But unless you change laws, you really won't make any traction. And so it's the laws that need to be changed. When you think about what we've done just in the last couple years, the last year or so with President Obama in place, HRC and the coalition of advocacy groups have been able to pass the Matthew Shepard Act. We were on the verge of repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. ENDA is right behind that. And then probably a comprehensive immigration reform that has the Uniting American Families Act is closely on the heels of that. Some key legislation that will make the lives of GLBT in this country just so much different. They're watershed events. So that all happens with contacting your representatives and your senators. You have to let your legislators know how you feel about issues. And so the biggest thing you can do is go on to some of these websites that allow you to send your message to your congressman, like hrc.org or sldn.org, and they've got templates set up where you can put in some of your data and you can send Senator Cornyn and Senator Hutchison your message about, you know, you need to vote for this. You need to repeal this law because it's discriminatory.
And something that I was a part of here not too long ago was a letter writing, actual physically writing letters to our representatives and all.
And that's a very good point. You know, just in Houston and Harris County alone, in the middle of Houston, we pretty much have three Democrats. And, you know, on board with repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell are Sheila Jackson Lee and Al Green. But Representative Gene Green over there in District 29 still hasn't signed up to be on the repeal boat, and we want him to sign up. So if you live in that district, in District 29 with Gene Green, call Gene Green and tell him, hey, get on the boat, you know, support the Military Readiness Enhancement Act, and let's repeal this draconian law. If you're up in one of the other districts that's held by a Republican, like Ted Poe in 2 or Ron Paul in 14, Mike McCall up in 10, or even John Culberson closer into the city in District 7, you can tell them too, because even if they're opposed to repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, if they find out that the bulk of their constituents want repeal, they're your representative, and they should be in Congress saying what the people, their constituents, really want.
Give us our website so we can get in touch go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, the two easiest ones to go to are the Human Rights Campaign, HRC.org, and also the Service Members Legal Defense Network, which is SLDN.org. Two great sites you can go to that have tons of information about the history of this law, where we're going with it, and the bills that are in Congress
and
now.
And you can find out more about Veterans Lobby Day, May 11th of this year, at those sites.
Exactly. You sure can.
We've been talking with Colonel Terrell Preston, retired of the Air Force. And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Lavinka. So don't just listen, be active, and let's make a change in the law.
And this is Queer Voices.
Stone steps, stone heart, back turned on a hero's part. The earth shakes and swallows the hope of man. Discharged from a body of lies. Your questions, they couldn't be more out of line. Why don't they ask me about my greatest love, so I could tell them the greatest story of two wild-hearted lovers who were sick of holding hands in the dark. Well, this is who we are. Just one man, so stand up and speak in your loudest voice. Ooh, 'cause justice delayed is justice denied. I'm so sick of hearing how your hands are tied. Give me one good reason why you're still holding on to these lies. And instead of feeding me lines, why don't you ask me about my greatest love? And I would tell you the greatest story of two wild-hearted lovers who were sick of holding hands in the dark. Oh, this is who we are. the dark. This is who we are.
And that's a song about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Matt Alber and Tom Goss, Who We Are, and that was actually just a digital single release from the year, well, from this year.
Science of Spirituality Houston Branch is conducting free meditation classes on the physical, mental, and spiritual benefits of meditation. This is a two-part series held the last two Sundays of every month from April to July. Part one covers the basics of meditation, stilling the body, calming the mind, and learning to focus. Part two covers advanced meditation techniques and how to get the most out of your meditation. The classes are from noon to 1:30 p.m. in room 213 of Robertson Hall at the University of St. Thomas, 3800 Montrose Boulevard, Houston, Texas. For more information, visit HoustonSOS.org. This has been KPFT Houston, 90.1 on your dial.
No one, come on, gather round, discard your Sunday shoes. Come on now.
Voices Breaking Boundaries presents acclaimed rock star, artist, and writer Patti Smith, reading from her new memoir, Just Kids, and performing music on Monday, April 19th, 7 p.m. at the Cullen Performance Hall, University of Houston. Books will be for sale at the event. For pre-sign and preferred seating, purchase tickets through Brazos Bookstore. The evening is sponsored by UH Cynthia Woods Center for the Arts and co-sponsored by KPFT, Brazos Bookstore, Houston Indie Media, Houston Institute for Culture, and many U of H departments. Don't miss Patti Smith in Houston. Bring your friends and join us for an inspiring evening of music, literature, and rich discussion. Go to vbbarts.org or call 713-524-7821 for more information.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Challenges that we have here in this community is the fact that we're made up of so many different types of people. We're not always like one. And certainly some of the organizations in this city have had problems in trying to work around that. Paul Guillory's here with us to talk about one of these issues. Now, you sort of have been a pioneer in trying to work out how we can all sort of work together, how people of color can be integrated into, you know, the GLBT. Well, you're all part of the GLBT community. So that I don't get myself here in trouble, why don't you try to explain a little bit about how do we do this?
Okay, well, first of all, my name is Paul Guillory, and I am a member of the Human Rights Campaign Steering Committee here in Houston. And I actually got involved with the Diversity Initiative for a Human Rights Campaign back in 2007. And it is something that is a national initiative for the Human Rights Campaign. This is something that it's not just something happening here locally in Houston. And I was first engaged in putting together the program, a national leadership training team, and then in September of 2007, I became a member of that team, and we went around the country to actually expose the steering committees to what diversity was all about.
And that's probably been a bigger challenge to HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, a little bit more so, maybe not just totally, than maybe some other organizations, because there probably hasn't been a perception and maybe a reality for a number of years that HRC hasn't been as inclusionary as they needed to be.
I would say that, you know, if we look at the nature of HRC and how they expanded out into local communities, collected money, send it back to D.C. to do the work that HRC does so well, and that's to, you know, looking at the federal and the state levels. Now, maybe HRC did not do things perfectly, but they are now aware of things that they can do better. You know, as an African-American male, many times I get more grief from other African-Americans in being part of HRC because there's still a perception that HRC is a rich, white, gay male organization. And to some extent, that is very true. However, that is not the total membership. Now, in my doing the diversity work, it is very, very important to understand that there are people of all differences, races, sex, gender differences that are part of the human rights campaign. And the diversity initiative actually is something that we're trying to do, create a diversity type thinking that will change everything that we do. It will change the nature of the federal club. It will change the nature of the galas. It will change our political committees. Because even though the LGBT community is very, very diverse, we cannot do it alone. We have to reach beyond what I like to call come from behind the table or reach beyond the hedges. But first of all, we have to recognize our own challenges within our community. And the better we can actually become aware of those and have conversations to hear the stories, to make the changes that are necessary, we can go ahead and expand that into, I would think, gathering more straight allies in engaging other communities, whether it's the Latino community, the African American, or the Asian community. And of course, we continue to deal with the transgender issues within our community also.
And let's not forget about women.
And women, yeah, the LGBT. I mean, it's everybody. And one of the things that I'd like to say about my work with HRC is that, you know, HRC is not perfect, but it's perfect for me.
Okay.
And what I mean by that, I have come in and taken a responsibility to bring awareness to certain issues, and I have been given the opportunity to actually do something about them. Now, is the change happening perfectly? No. But the change is happening. And I think that's where I want to go with the dialogue that we're going to have Saturday night, where the local HRC leaders will be engaged with members of the African American or Black LGBT community in allowing a face-to-face dialogue where hopefully we can get a better understanding of each other.
Well, and this is not just HRC concern. It should be a concern of every GLBT organization.
Absolutely. I will say this. I think you're absolutely right. My passion right now is with the human rights campaign, and I'm actually seeking to make change where I can, and that's in the human rights campaign. However, I've already been approached as a result of putting this topic out. I've already been approached by a couple of other LGBT organizations who are very interested in partnering with us to do more diversity work. Because this, you're absolutely right, the segregation and, you know, or the isolation is not just an HRC issue. It's a LGBT community issue. Two things I want to bring up. One of the things, for example, with African Americans face a lot of discrimination in their religious communities. And the religion community is extremely important to us. Now, again, African Americans, LGBT people, face the discrimination in the LGBT community. So it's a double rub. You know, you come out to your family, you come out to your church doesn't want you there. You just got through talking about don't ask, don't tell. Well, there are many churches in this city. That's exactly what they want from LGBT people. They do not want them to come out. Then these LGBT African Americans, myself included, come into the LGBT community, and what are they faced with? They're faced with the racism. And included, you know, they're faced with the classism. So these are challenges that HRC is aware of, and we're taking steps to do something about it. It may not be happening, it may not be changing fast enough for everybody else, but the bottom line, there's a lot of work within our organization that is taking place.
Now, you said you traveled around a bit. Do you think that in some other cities they moved ahead further than we have in Houston?
Well, I would say, first of all, you have to look at the nature or the cultural diversity or the types of diversity issues that the different cities would have. I would say there's not necessarily one that's doing better. I can say that, you know, locally, we are approaching things in different areas. We've done, as Jennifer, who was one of the tri-chairs of diversity that I worked with, as she can tell you, we did a lot of work with the transgender community. We did programs to reach out to the African-American community. One of the significant things we're doing right now in the Latino community is the U.S. Order. This is a national initiative that is getting legal immigrants to engage with citizenship immediately. So we had, back in September, we had a volunteer program where we had 80 HRC volunteers helping legal immigrants become citizens of the United States. And the reason this was so important is because it cost $675 to complete those, and we had the assistance of lawyers in the process of doing this. It was a tremendous lesson for us, because what we learned is that there are many, many people here locally in Houston, they may not have the money necessary to become federal club members, but they do have the time. And so what we're trying to do right now is to engage more of the people on a more frequent basis with volunteer opportunities. A couple of weeks ago, we participated in phase two of this U.S. Order program, which was the census. And we had a very successful, we had over 40 volunteers doing that. And then this coming Saturday, we'll be doing it again with the citizenship and application. We have another 20 volunteers that will be doing that. So it's not just one thing that we're trying to do, but I can say that I'm passionate about this whole diversity idea. So I'm working with some great people locally, and I'm taking the initiative to do what's within my control to impact change here in Houston.
Not being black, how do you all know each other? I mean, you know, in the sort of white community, we have our bars. There's another great, the second part of the article in Outsmart talks about the Dianas, which is the longest continuous running gay organization probably in the country, which we believe. There's been a long history of how the bar started and how we got together and being able to socialize. It was the bars. Is there a parallel in the black community?
Well, I'll say this, and this is something that happened. I first did this a few years ago, and if you do it today, it will come up the same way. When you put black gay community, you get a lot of porn sites, and you get a lot of HIV sites. Unfortunately, many people think that is the black gay community. For myself, one of the things that I did when I came here in 1999 is formed a group called the Men's Gathering. It's an African American empowerment group. And last year we did this this event called Brothers Speaking, where we had over 300 people participate in this event. And it was sponsored by 2020 Entertainment and the St. Hope Foundation. Jeff Campbell was one of the primary leaders behind this. We had an opportunity to engage different members of the African American community. And the question was stated, when are the men and women in the community going to get together? So the Men's Gathering took a step forward, and we have now created something called TMG One Voice. This TMG One Voice, the focus is still for African American empowerment of the men and women. Uh-huh. However, everybody is allowed to be part of that group. So just like we have straight allies, the TMG One Voice have allies within the LGBT community that's not African-American. And that's how you found out about, you know, what we were doing next week, is because our TMG One Voice has over 400 members right now. And so to answer your question, my African-American GLBT community started with the Men's Gathering, and it fanned out to all the people that I've met through that particular effort. And we've actually been doing this dialoguing for over 10 years now, over 11 years.
Is there a somewhat of a feeling sometimes within the community that they don't want to reach out, they want to just make this a say, you know, like a place for black members of the community?
No, I don't think that's it at all. I think what we do, and I stated this when we first started the men's gathering, we separate to empower, not to be divisive. Because if you go to the bars, you'll see different people in the bars. However, if you look at major events, for example, the jungle, I don't know a lot about jungle or bunnies on the bayou, and then you look at Houston Splash, which is over 5,000 African-American men, GLBT, men and women, come into the city. The majority of the other community, they have no idea about
exactly.
This.
Exactly.
Exactly. No, they don't know anything about it.
They don't know anything about it. But if you look at the bunnies, the same thing. If you look at the people who participate, they're participating. So what we've done very well, we know how to segregate and isolate. Not that we're always being racist. I'm just saying we are learning to be around people we're familiar with. So when you bring in something like diversity, diversity is not necessarily uncomfortable. Diversity becomes unfamiliar because it's pushing people out of their familiar zone, not necessarily their comfort zone. And that's what I want to happen in Houston. I want people to become uncomfortable because they're not familiar. And do something about it. And you know what? It doesn't matter whether it happens today, tomorrow. As long as the work is taking place, that's the important thing.
Okay. We're going to take a little bit of a break right now and play some music, and we'll be back after that.
A chance in your hands, then I know the best.
That was Tegan and Sarah. The name of the song, The Cure, from the album Sainthood, released 2009, actually on a private label. Now, the way that we get all of this music that's released privately and not published and so on is from J.D. Doyle, who does Queer Music Heritage. And you can find out more about the music and hear more of this sort of music at his website, queermusicheritage.com. This is Queer Voices.
Paul, tell me a little bit about how the men's gathering started.
Okay, in 1994, that is the year I came out to my wife and told her that I was gay. We ended up going to therapy in the Oaklawn area, and I was looking for, we actually had a gay therapist, and I came across a newspaper that stated something about the men's gathering. It was a support group for African American men that was meeting in people's homes around a meal, and that's where I first became exposed to it. That was in 1995, and I was a part of the men's gathering in Dallas until I moved here. And then when I moved here, I was challenged to start a men's gathering of Houston. And the unfortunate thing is that now the men's gathering in Houston is celebrating, has just recently celebrated our 11th year in February, and the Dallas group died about 5 or 6 years ago. So we are the only men's gathering group. There are a few other groups, but we dialogue every other week. Right now we meet at the GLBT Cultural Center in the Montrose Counseling Center, and we dialogue for 3 hours, and the sole purpose of our group is dialogue and to become empowered through dialogue so that we can identify these self-imposed limitations, let them go, and overcome the things that are fearful so we can become more courageous in our walk as black gay men.
Now, you meet on Saturdays from 6 to 9 p.m.?
6 to 9 p.m.
Now, that seems a little bit odd for meeting time, but why does that work for you all?
We played around with the time over the years. We did Sunday, 3 o'clock. We had some things on Friday. And apparently Saturday, after people have gone shopping, before they're putting on their outfits to go clubbing, there's a dead period, and that dead period is around this idea of 6 to 9. And we maximize the number of people we get. Right now, we're probably averaging, when it's just the men, we average somewhere between 30 and 45 men on any particular week. And when it's the TMG One Voice, we get between 75 and 100 people. And so we're hoping to have 100 plus this weekend for this particular topic on HRC and the black LGBT community.
Now, are you encouraging everybody to show up?
I'm encouraging everybody to show up. Yes, whoever feel they have something to say about this topic should show up, because when you look at diversity, diversity is not about other people changing. Ultimately, it's about each one of us changing. I used to do a diversity training and in corporate America, and I would get, you know, they started the top management, so it's like, okay, I'm getting mostly white men coming in. And so they're saying, okay, this guy is going to try to indict me as a racist and a bigot. And I would tell them, I said, you know what? I said, first of all, I'm not here to indict you as a racist or a bigot. And at the end of the class, we're not going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. I said, how many of you are married? And so I get, or have a partner. So I get the hands up. How many of you have children? I said, your children are just like you, right? Oh, no, no, they're not. And your partner or your spouse or your wife or your husband, just like you, right? Oh, no. I said, you did not have to come to this class to learn about diversity. All you have to do is go home. So that's the message I want the audience that's listening right now to hear. This diversity change is about you. Yes, we're going to be focusing on the human rights campaign and the black LGBT community, mm-hmm. but ultimately our community crosses all the diversities. So ultimately we want to address all of them. So yes, everyone is welcome.
And where do you hope to go from here?
What happens, you know, we've been Human Rights Campaign, we've done a lot of surveys. You know, Jennifer was around when we started the surveys in Houston, finished number one because
yes,
we were most aggressive in getting these surveys completed. But this whole effort is called Equality Forward. And now there's a lot of good data that's been done to help us to connect with people who are different. In understanding the differences, but also in understanding the similarities. What I hope happens Saturday night is the fact that there's now a face-to-face. It's not a statistic. It's not a report. It's another human being that's actually going to be in a place where they can actually tell their story. And people like myself, I'll be able to share my story to let people know why I'm so passionate about the work with HRC. And when people tell each other's stories and listen and seek to understand, then to be understood, there's a relationship that is formed. And what I hope happens Saturday is the beginning of a shift in Houston where HRC will step up its game to be a more inclusive and welcoming organization.
Do you all address HIV/AIDS?
At the national level, I know that they do. One of the goals that we have this year, we've been very successful in pulling together members of HRC and friends of HRC to go out and volunteer for different events, whether it's the gala, whether it's the US Order extension into the Latino community. One of the goals that we have is to specifically target HIV organizations and to work with offering our support there. There is a huge part of HRC that deals with HIV and AIDS, but unfortunately, you know, I haven't ventured into that particular realm yet.
Well, I guess one of the reasons why I was asking is because the prevalence of HIV/AIDS in the black community is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is probably education, understanding, and, you know, I think possibly this could be a really good opportunity about helping educate your community.
Well, you know, I think the education, I will say this, there's education that's already taking place in the community, but it is an opportunity for HRC to partner in some respect to supplement the education that is taking place. I would say, you know, with organizations like Saint Hope and some of the programs that they have with Fusion, which targets the young African American men, there's some good work that's being done right now in the community. And so I would say it's not like HRC is going to come in and fix it all. No.
Well, and that's not necessarily, they're not a health organization.
Right.
They're a political organization.
Yeah. But we also have a nonprofit side that deals with, you know, diversity issues, with religion and faith, and HIV and AIDS. So we can also get involved in that. All mm-hmm. I'm saying is that we're not going to be the final word. There's a lot of work that's taking place, but we can partner in order to make sure this work continues.
Do you see some hope in the religious community, within the black community, of making some small changes?
I think I'm going to just say this. When people like myself tell their story on how they were invalidated and have the courage to leave these churches and to join organizations like HRC where they have a voice, things will change. There was the effort that took place in Washington, D.C. with HRC religious and faith community joining with HRC diversity community. Those people worked behind the scenes, and without those two entities, the same-sex marriage in D.C. would not have passed. So the political group could not have done that by themselves. Behind the scenes, and I'm saying, you know, people like Donna Payne, it was her, and people like Harry Knox from Religion and Faith and his people partnering together to do that work. So to answer your question is that it's not going to be easy. to change, you know, change many churches. But if we start the conversation and we find one church that's willing to have a conversation with us, then the change will continue.
Yeah, an interesting side note that in Washington that passed by only one vote against, and the person who voted against it was Marion Barry, who used to be a board member of Pacifica Radio. Of course, he was also used to be mayor of Washington, D.C.
And a sort of YouTube star.
Yes.
No comment.
That's all that needs to be said.
Well, and certainly churches in not in the black community are challenged, too, about being open to GLBT people.
Yeah.
So there's no two ways about it. So let's talk about the Saturday event, the who, what, when, where, why aspect of it.
Saturday, the men's, not the men's gathering, but TMG One Voice. By the way, TMG One Voice can be found on Facebook. It's TMG, and then space, the word one, O-N-E, and then space, the word voice. We have a Facebook group. Anybody and everybody is welcome to join. We will be dialoguing with, the topic is HRC and the black LGBT community. Myself and one of my tri-chairs, Brandon Mack, will be co-facilitating this dialogue from 6 to 9 p.m. It's taking place at the Montrose Counseling Center's GLBT Cultural Center, which is on the first floor in room 112 and 113. And, it's the address is 401 Bernard, B-R-A-N-A-R-D. And everyone is welcome to come out.
Okay. Well, and I hope to have you on again so we can talk about the progress of what's going on.
I would love to come back.
Absolutely. And this is such an important topic, and I appreciate the work you're doing in this community.
Thank you very much.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
A lifelong love story with a discriminatory ending follows this story of the hidden love life of an anti-discrimination champion.
It's time for Who Said That? On this episode of the Rainbow Minute. Because homosexuality has been condemned at various times in history, gathering information about same-gender relationships is sometimes very difficult. Some relatives of famous gay or lesbian people chose to hide or destroy letters that revealed their kin's true orientation. However, some letters have survived through time, like one to sports reporter Lorena Hickok, dated March 7, 1933. In part, it read, quote, "Oh, I want to put my arms around you. I ache to hold you close. Your ring is a great comfort. I look at it and think, she does love me, or I wouldn't be wearing it." Who said that? It was First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, who wore a sapphire ring given to her by Lorena Hickok. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
There's nothing so international as a powerful idea. I'm Edmund White. It is the overwhelming international flavor of the lesbian and gay rights movement that has proved so powerful over the past couple of decades. And one radio program has been there to record, to inform, and to entertain. So please keep listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine on this station.
The Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, passed during the administration of President Bill Clinton, prohibits the U.S. government from recognizing millions of American lives, liberties, and pursuits of happiness. The law's wide-ranging impact, for example, prevents gay and lesbian couples from getting Social Security spousal benefits, even though they had deductions for them taken out of every paycheck. At the signing ceremony for the Social Security Act of 1935, President Franklin D. Roosevelt said, "We can never insure 100% of the population against 100% of the hazards and vicissitudes of life, but we have tried to frame a law which will give some measure of protection to the average citizen and family against poverty-ridden old age." As This Way Out's Steve Pride reports, some excluded average citizens are demanding their own equal measure of that protection.
As they reach retirement age, coupled LGBT seniors are finding their Social Security benefits are far from equivalent to their heterosexual counterparts. So on the morning of April 11th, a crowd of more than 700 people rallied at the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Center to protest that inequity. Speakers at what was called Rock for Equality, and we're talking rocking chairs, not bands, included members of Congress and local dignitaries. But perhaps the real VIPs were not the usual VIPs.
Hi, my name is Alice. For 45 years, my beloved Sylvia and I lived and loved together. We loved proudly. We walked with our heads held tall and dared anyone to look down upon us. We both worked our whole lives and we paid into the Social Security system for nearly 50 years. Together we built... Together we built a partnership of life and of love. When Sylvia died last March in 2009, Social Security refused to provide me survivor's benefits. They dismissed us. Our federal government and Social Security dismissed us as though our relationship had never existed. 45 years, and they said we had no meaning. This has got to change.
Alice Herman lives in a gay and lesbian elder housing facility called Triangle Square, only 3 blocks from the steps where she spoke. But for the introverted retiree, it was a distance that took a lifetime, a tragedy, and the strength of her lost partner for her to traverse.
My name is Alice. I'm a 74-year-old woman. I found out I was gay when I was in my 20s, which feels like all of my life. And I've had 2 partners in my life, one of them for 45 years. And so to me, I've had 1 partner in my life, Sylvia.
How did you meet Sylvia?
I may cry at moments because sometimes the tears just come when I don't expect them. And because a big part of me knows that Sylvia's right here with me because she wishes she could be speaking. Yeah. Anything I say for the 2 of us. Because the life that we lived, we never occurred to us to live closeted. We never announced ourselves, "Hi, I'm Sylvia and Alice, I'm gay." We just lived our lives. We worked, and we played, and we had friends. We had gay friends and straight friends, and everyone knew we were gay. She was a downtown girl. I was an uptown girl. And I was going to college while she was working nightclubs. I was learning how to be a school teacher while she was learning how to be a hat check girl. So we were very, very different. Her hair was flaming red, and she was very tiny, 4'11". And extremely gregarious. I was very shy and studious. 2 very, very different people. That's why when we met, we were introduced as a joke. Because I had broken up with someone, she had one, and we had mutual friends. And they said, "Oh, let's introduce Sylvia and Alice. They'll never last 1 night together, ever. They'll have absolutely nothing to talk about." And for some reason or other, the differences balanced us. It was a balance that came. She had what I needed in my life. I had what she needed in her life. And together we made a life.
And then last year, Sylvia passed away. Tell me about that loss.
When Sylvia died, I did not know how to do life without Sylvia. I mean, after 45 years, we finished each other's sentences. It's a simple thing to say, but she was my other hand, my other leg. She was my everything. After she died, I said to people, you know, how some people do WWJD. I said, my life friend right now is WWSD. What would Sylvia do? Because I needed her thought process in my life, because that was how we balanced each other. I mean, who she was, she was. I was who I was. Put us together, we were a whole. Now, half of me wasn't there. And I did not know who Alice was without Sylvia.
Social Security didn't recognize you as a surviving spouse. What does that mean to you financially?
It left me destitute. That's the gift the federal government gave me. They couldn't even give me the $200 that they'd automatically send as a death benefit. You know, not that it pays to bury anybody, but that's what they send, the $200. They didn't even send that. It was as though my 45 years never happened. It was devastating. And I also didn't have the money to pay the rent.
You both worked. How long did you pay into the system?
I started working when I was 15. And I was born in 1935, so I was 15, what, 1950. And I'm 74. I stopped working somewhere around 90-something or other. At least 40 years I've paid into the system, if not more. I was a school teacher and I was a social worker. Sylvia worked longer than that, because she started younger than that when she was in Greenwich Village, and she worked more consistently. When we came from New York to California, she was already in the garment industry and had worked her way up, and at that point she was just a full charge bookkeeper. Later she became an office manager and a chief financial officer. I mean, she really worked her way up through street smarts, which is what she had. I had book smarts. She had street smarts. That's, you know, we were that balance. It was interesting.
What are the numbers? What would your income be if your relationship was recognized by the federal government?
I would have had approximately, I'll say, $1,400 a month more. That's a lot of money. Could I be living in the lap of luxury? No. But for sure, I would have been able to pay for my medication, which I can't always pay for. Recently, I've been approved for extra help, but that's only in the last month. But up until that, if I needed medication and I needed to take, let's say, two pills a day, I would take one. I have COPD. I have difficulty breathing. I don't use the inhaler every time I need it because I don't want to use it up, because it costs me $78 a month to refill it. Those may seem like silly things to other people, but you know what? The big things. You don't eat the same way. You don't. There are a lot of things you just don't do. I wish I could speak to a congressional committee and have them look at me and look them directly in the eye and ask them exactly what it is about my relationship that they felt that we were not entitled to the same Social Security benefits as a straight couple who has been together for 5 years, not 45 years. What makes them feel that we are not as entitled as a straight couple who has been divorced and no longer living together, but they were living together for X amount of time? What makes those people have more of a marriage by definition than ours? I want them to look me in the eye and tell me. I really believe, Steve, that if we could just put ourselves out there and they could see who we are as people and not as just words, gay, homosexual, lesbian, those are just words, they mean nothing. I am a woman who loved a woman who loved me. And we had a life together. And if what we had was not a marriage, I will repeat again and again, what is the definition of marriage? If it is not love and devotion and caring and spending a life together and being a unit that contributes to society together, what is a marriage?
I think Sylvia would be so proud of you.
Thank you.
Following the rally, the crowd, both young and old, gay and straight, marched more than a mile down Hollywood Boulevard to the Social Security Administration, but only after Congresswoman Linda Sanchez of California announced...
Good morning! Right now, same-sex couples are denied the spousal benefits, the survivor benefits, and the death benefits that heterosexual couples receive. Right now, same-sex married couples pay equally into a system that they don't receive equal benefits from that system in return. This must stop. That's why I am so proud to announce today that when we return back into session in Washington, D.C. in just a couple of days, I'll be introducing legislation that will end discrimination in Social Security against same-sex couples. Let's end this discrimination in Social Security. Are you with me? We will get the change made. Thank you. God bless.
Passage of this legislation will not be easy, not by any measure. So the Rock for Equality bi-coastal protest that kicked off on April 11th in Los Angeles concludes, but does not end by any means, with another rally on April 18th in Washington, D.C. Find more info on their website, rockforequality.org. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Say that we are not afraid. We are not afraid. We shall overcome something. Still here in my
for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Jen Mahoney and J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Thanks also to Jonathan Gruber and Eric Boschman at Radio Netherlands. David Dubb, Brett Emery, and Mike Rickard performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is only made possible by our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, listen to our podcasts, read the text of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WREK Atlanta, Georgia, 3BBB Ballarat, Victoria, Boise Community Radio, Boise, Idaho, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Meeting Mr. Right, the man of my dreams, the one who showed me true love, or at least it seems, with brown cocoa skin and curly back hair. It's just the way he looks at me, that gentle loving stare. Finally, you've come along the way I feel about.
doing just can't be wrong. If you only knew the way I feel about you, I just can't describe it. Oh no no, finally it's happened to me, right in front of my face. My feelings can't describe it. Finally it's happened to me, right in front of my face, and I just to be the one, but all he ever wanted was to have a little fun. But then you came along and brightened up my world, and in my heart I feel that I'm that special kind of girl. Finally you've come along, the way I feel about you, it just can't be wrong. If you only knew the way I feel about you, just can't describe it. Oh no, no. Finally it has happened to me, right in front of my face. My feelings can't describe it. Finally it has happened to me, right in front of my face, and I just can't hide it.
Privately released last year, that was Joseph Adam covering the song Finally. And Jack, what do we have for the final part of Queer Voices?
Well, I wanted to thank Tim Brookover for hosting another really good community meeting that he does quarterly at the community center. And basically, this is a meeting that was open to everybody. It's usually runs from 1 till about 4, 4:30, when people finally get tired of talking or finally start wandering out. But this happens every quarter. It is just an open meeting where you can bring up stuff. We had some of the college kids that was great to see young people involved talking about different things that are going on in the community. Well, one of the things that's happening is this Saturday in Austin, Equality Texas is having sort of their statewide meeting. And if you want some more information on that, you can go to equalitytexas.org and it will explain. It's free. It happens in the Capitol building. And it's basically, they do this once every 2 years and talks about that. The Community Center is starting a scholarship fund, which is pretty exciting. If you want some more information, you go to the HoustonGLBTCommunityCenter.org and find out more. Well, I'm not even sure it's up on their website. But there's another thing that's going on. They're having there on the 20th of April, they're having their seniors potluck, which apparently has been rather successful. So that's what's happening at the Community Center.
And coming up on May 1st is the Transgender Unity Banquet and the reopening of the Transgender Center. One of the good things about it, the Transgender Unity Banquet supports the Peggy Rudd Scholarship Fund, talking about scholarships, that we give out scholarships to those students from the GLBT community, especially the trans community, who would ordinarily not get scholarships from some of the other organizations that give out scholarships. And you can find out more information on that at htuc.org.
The new edition, the April edition of Outsmart's out, and there is a wonderful article, a continuing article about the Dianas, and you can also go online at outsmartmagazine.com and see an even larger article on that. So that's just a really incredible story.
Well, we want to thank, from the Montrose Counseling Center, we had Sally Huffer with us tonight. As always, a delight to have. And we were talking about the Montrose Counseling Center being the, what's it exactly called, Jack?
The Cultural Center on the first floor.
Right.
They are, the Montrose Counseling Center is the organizational grand marshal, and Ann Robertson is the grand marshal, the honorary grand marshal this year.
And then we had Terry Preston, Colonel. We talked about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and what HRC has been working toward repealing that, as well as announcing that the Veterans Lobby Day is May 11th in Washington, D.C. You can find out more about it by going to HRC or veteranslobbyday.org.
And we will see you next week.
And thank Paul Guillory for the last segment. This is Queer Voices.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Falinski. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
It's almost here. On April 17th, 18th, 24th, and 25th, the Houston International Festival will spotlight the Caribbean in downtown Houston. KPFT is proud to sponsor an amazing schedule of great music on the world music stage, including George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic, Ozomatli, King Sunny Ade, Joe Ely, Steel Pulse, and more. And in honor of KPFT's 40th anniversary and iFest's 40th anniversary, you can get a 40% discount off the price of tickets at the gate. Just go to ifest.org between now and April 10th and enter promotion code HIFKPFT04. Remember, this special 40th anniversary discount is only available through April 10th. Come downtown to the Houston International Festival, April 17th through 25th. Supported by KPFT Houston.
This fall, KPFT will hold an election to seat delegates on the local station board. There will be separate but parallel elections for both listener and staff delegates to the Pacifica Foundation's five local station boards. That election may seem like a long way away, but it will be here before you know it. Why not consider participating in KPFT as a member of our board? Board delegates are elected to bring diverse grassroots voices from the community into the dialogue between the community and the station. Candidates are chosen in both listener and staff pools. To be a listener candidate, you can contribute at least $25 to a foundation radio station. If you are a KPFT volunteer and want to be considered as a staff candidate, you must complete 30 or more verifiable volunteer hours at a foundation radio station. Pacifica's principles inspire us to strive for diversity, and we encourage members of our diverse communities to consider being a part of this board. This is KPFT, Houston.
Real Film presents a screening of The Fire Next Time, directed by Patrice O'Neill, sponsored by KPFT Radio. The film follows a deeply divided group of Montana citizens caught in a web of conflict over growth, the environment, and the power of talk radio. It's a story with eerie relevance to today's headlines. So come out and join us Saturday, May 8th, 2010, at the Houston Community College Spring Branch Campus for the Performing Arts Theater at 1010 West Sam Houston Parkway North, Houston, Texas, 77043. The ticket price includes free refreshments. There will be a reception for O'Neill from 7 to 8 p.m. Screening time is 8 to 9:30. Questions and answers are 9:30 to 10 p.m. For more information, you may visit the PBS website at www.pbs.org/POV/The Fire Next Time. KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.